No representation is made that the quality of legal services to be performed is greater than the legal services performed by other lawyers. Losing a loved one is hard, but losing a loved one and not having an estate plan is even harder. Attorney Harlan Mitchell witnessed what not having an estate plan can do to families and decided to use his experience to do something about it.
One of the main reasons I switched into this is that I had two children who lost both parents. Grandparents came and adopted them. And unfortunately, the grandparents passed and left no provisions for those children. And so they had their brother, who used to be their uncle before they were adopted, take them in to raise. And now he's left struggling trying to care for them because there was no provision, no funding for them. And with a few simple documents, we could have prevented all that had they come to see me before any of this happened.
I encourage you to go to BamaEstatePlanning.com or give Harlan Mitchell a call at 256-216-9884. Again, that website is BamaEstatePlanning.com. Let Harlan Mitchell help you with estate planning. Do it for those you love and do it today. Do you have knee, shoulder, elbow, and other joint pain? Would you like immediate relief without surgery? Let me introduce you to Dr. Michael Farah, who's been serving patients around the world since 1986. At Freedom Medical Center and Trinity Medical Care, you can get platelet-rich plasma injections and other treatments. Dr. Farah is your choice for cosmetic and regenerative medicine. Schedule your consult today at Trinity Medical Care by calling 256-489-3192. That's Trinity Medical Care, located at 8010 South Parkway in Huntsville. Walk-ins are welcome. Is it time for a haircut? Go see my friends Philip Butler and B.H. Parker at Southwind Barbershop, located at 1637 Lee Street in Rogersville, Alabama. Give them a call at 256-247-5658. That's 256-247-5658.
Experience the difference at Athens Bible School. The vision and purpose is to provide each student a quality education in a Christ-centered environment to develop the whole person spiritually, mentally, physically, and socially in safe and supportive surroundings. The solid biblical foundation permeates learning and culture in the classrooms and every extracurricular activity.
Hey everybody, this is Daryl Worley, and you're listening to The Mark White Show. Hey, step up and make a difference like he does.
Hey y'all, this is Jeff Foxworthy, and you can make a huge difference in somebody's life. You just may not have figured out how yet, and that's why you're listening to The Mark White Show.
Hi, this is Maggie Peterson. I played Charlene Darling on The Andy Griffith Show, and you are listening to The Mark White Show.
Hi, folks. This is Ricky Skaggs, and you're listening to The Mark White Show.
Hello, I'm Gene Stallings, and this is The Mark White Show. Get off the sideline and get involved and make a difference in your community.
You are listening to The Mark White Show. My daddy is your host, Mark White.
Welcome to another edition of The Mark White Show and the Mary Faye Hedrick Good Deed segment. I am your host, Mark White. I posted about Maggie a couple of days ago, and the need for prayers for Maggie. Her mom, Catherine Grant, had posted about that. I had seen that post through Lauren Green, who has the Rosie. We've had them on the show as well, Ben and Lauren. Right now, I have on the line with me Catherine Grant. She has put Maggie to sleep, and we're able to talk right now. Welcome to the Mark White Show, Catherine.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Glad to have you. We have a mutual friend and Megan Green, who helped to organize a GoFundMe, and I know that you're appreciative of that.
So much. Absolutely.
Let's talk about Maggie's situation so that listeners and followers know where Maggie is right now in her journey, when it started, what she was diagnosed with, and where we are now.
So Maggie was diagnosed in March of 2019. The diagnosis came as a really big surprise. We weren't expecting anything in relation to cancer at all. But it was obviously a God thing. And it saved her life that we found it. From there, we completed 4 full rounds of chemotherapy. And she was able to hit remission on her 3rd birthday, August the 4th. On that day, we were able to go home back to our hometown in Coleman, Alabama, where I remained at home. She still had at least another year or so before she could be, in a public daycare and that kind of setting. So I stayed at home with her to avoid any kind of exposure or anything like that. So for the month of September, everything was wonderful. All of our labs were wonderful. October came and things were still pretty wonderful. You know, a couple of hiccups here and there that I had started to notice. By November, I had this really odd feeling that the cancer was back. And I didn't really know why I felt that way. I just kind of had the mommy tuition, I guess. But all throughout November, all of her labs were coming back normal. Nothing was reflecting a relapse. So I'm pretty sure I looked kind of crazy because I was so adamant that it was back. She was very, very obviously miserable. She cried a lot, and that just isn't like her at all. She's about the happiest child you'll ever have the pleasure of meeting. So having one that's all of a sudden tearful a lot, not wanting to walk anymore, not wanting to eat on her own anymore, all the things that she had been doing, she was no longer doing those things. And it just, in my mind, it all went back to thinking that the cancer was back. So in December, I asked them to do an MRI, asked them to do a bone marrow aspiration, basically the most detailed of the tests that would tell if she had relapsed or not. The only thing that was really abnormal was her platelet count. And so we just stayed on top of that within a couple week range. I would take her every other day to have her platelets tested. And finally, after I would say maybe 6 weeks, I guess, right at the beginning of January of this year of 2020, her white blood count had been pretty elevated. So that kind of set the tone for, okay, a little bit of concern, a little bit of worry that maybe I wasn't too crazy. And so within days of that, it was full blown showing up in her labs. So from there, we did a bone marrow aspiration, which also came back showing that it was there as well. And so at that time, they sent us straight up to eight quarterback to our well-known cancer floor in Children's here. And within, I would say, a couple of weeks, we found out that Maggie also had some tumors in her head. Primarily a large one right behind her sinus cavity. So it was the biggest one that they had seen, and in a child that small, and with the location of it, extraction wasn't really an option, and chemotherapy had obviously kind of not really done too much for it. We have no idea how long it had been there at that point, or really anything about it. And then there was another one at the base of her skull. So for a few weeks, I would say, Maggie was really tired all the time. In the hospital, she would primarily sleep, which was very difficult for all of us because a toddler does not sleep, not often at least. So it affected her in obvious ways. So as we tried different chemotherapies, it began responding somewhat to those. And I would say around, May, I believe, we kind of found out that it was still, the cancer and the tumors were just still not where we really needed them. Our whole goal from the time of the relapse was initially to get to bone marrow transplant and get her a transplant. But in order to do that, you have to hit a certain level of remission for it to be, effective. So around May, they had said, it's just not, we just can't quite achieve enough remission to go forward with a bone marrow transplant. So from that point, we decided to move forward with total body radiation. And, you know, that kind of threw me off at first because I thought, well, if it's just a tumor in her head, why not do like localized radiation? Why not do targeted radiation? But, you know, they kind of reminded me that it's not, we're not necessarily trying to get what, just what we see. It's also what we don't see. And that typically if a child has a tumor that big in one area, there are more than likely several others throughout the body that just have not been found. So I completely understood. And we went forward with several rounds of total body radiation. That was really, really hard on her. She was very sick, sicker than what even we were used to at that point. And pretty much we went straight from the last round of total body radiation directly into transplant. So we had been working on all the transplant information and workup and all that all throughout that process of doing the radiation and even the last round of the chemo. So that whenever the time came, we would be ready, wouldn't have anything holding us back. So we were able to move pretty quickly. I'm super thankful for a really great team working with us here. So on July 28th, Maggie had her bone marrow transplant. I have two other sons, Kyle and Eli. Eli just turned 7 last week, and Kyle is 8. So whenever Maggie relapsed and we began discussing the idea of a transplant, they said that typically close to kin, male, is going to be your best chance for a match. So initially they tested Kyle and Eli first. Eli was a haplo, which is just a half match, 6 out of 12, and Kyle was a perfect 12 out of 12 match.
Wow.
So, yes, yes. And Kyle has probably had the most difficulty emotionally with all of this. Both of them pretty much worship the ground that she walks on and just, they adore her. And so I feel like that was just another God thing that he worked out so that Kyle could feel like he was doing something to help her. And he was very excited about it. I mean, he would tell us all the time that he's not scared about pain or the needles or anything as long as he gets to help her and hopefully save her and all of that. So he was excited to take on the role as her donor.
You said Kyle is 7 years old?
Kyle is 8. He just turned 8
wow.
in October.
Just a year older than my own daughter, Cora. She just turned 7.
Really? See, now, and my middle son, Eli, just turned 7 last week.
That's an incredible amount to carry as young boys.
It is, and I feel like, which I'm sure every parent says this, but I feel like they are so much more in tune emotionally than some that age are. I feel like, and maybe it's because of our journey with cancer, but it has been crazy. Emotional. They feel things on a much deeper level than what you would ever imagine 7 and an 8-year-old to feel. They're constantly praying for her and calling and asking about her. You know, whenever Maggie relapsed the first time in January, the oldest son, Kyle, went through a difficult phase where he began questioning God's faithfulness. You know, he had seen God's work right before us. You know, Maggie hit remission. Everyone in our town had been praying so hard. We had been praying so hard. So once she hit remission, I think that was the first time Kyle had seen God's hand in something like personally. So I feel like that was very, I don't even know the word, but huge for him and his faith to be able to witness that. So whenever she relapsed, it was very confusing for him. He couldn't understand why God would allow her to get better and then allow her to become sick again, and sicker this time than the last. And so I was really afraid of how to deal with that and like how to help him navigate through those emotions, those doubts and worries and fears. Only because, you know, at that age, it's a critical age as far as learning to cope and learning to process and that kind of thing. And I was so terrified that I was not going to guide him in the right way to process and cope with things. So I had, you know, talked to a few different people here to get some input so that I could, you know, kind of pray about exactly how to help him and Eli with the news. And, you know, the most popular feedback I got was to help them realize that they are not wrong for feeling the things that they feel. And they're not, it's not unvalidated, that everything they're going through is completely acceptable.
Yes.
That they don't have to feel ashamed for the way that they're feeling or hide it or pretend it's not there or apply to us and claim they're fine when they're really not. You know, just on my own time, I had kind of something I had personally prayed about was I felt that God kind of put it on my heart to help Kyle see the relation with me in those doubts and that, you know, hey, baby, it's not just you being a child that's tempted to doubt. Even mommy doubts, you know, like it's not a fault of yours for doubting and for having a hard time processing and all that, that, you know, I have days where I'm really sad or I'm really doubtful or I'm really scared, and that there's nothing wrong with him having those days as well. And that it's in those times that we just have to know in our hearts that God sees everything, whereas what we see is very limited. And regardless of how it feels right now, there's a reason that all this is happening, and it's a good reason. Again, it may not feel that way right now, but buddy, if you'll just hang on, once we get a little further, you know, I feel like we'll start seeing what God's doing. We've just got to stick together for now and make it through this.
There's definitely a unique and special bond that's being created between you and Kyle and Eli and Maggie during this time that some people will never experience. But as you said, it creates a level of maturity within the boys that doesn't happen just under normal circumstances. These are different circumstances that build character for people that help to strengthen your family and bring you together even more because of this sweet, precious little girl.
Right. And I feel like they, you know, help them understand perseverance and trials and remaining hopeful in the midst of hard times. So we had the transplant on July 28th. Kyle was, again, so excited. You know, the morning of the transplant, I kept asking, are you scared? Are you worried? Do you think it's going to hurt? And he's like, Mommy, I do not even care. I'm just ready to get this done and for her to get it so that we can move forward and she can be healthy again and she can come home and we can be together again. So that was his primary desire, was just getting her home again. So he went through the surgery, which went perfect. Everything went just as planned. You know, he was a little hoarse from the breathing tube when he woke up, but I mean, I remember our team talking about his bone marrow being some of the most beautiful bone marrow they had ever seen, you know, which is funny.
That's different. That's different.
Yes. It was, you know, something that kind of brought a smile to our face and stuff. And so later that same day was when the transplant happened with Maggie. Her dad and I and my mom got to stand at her bedside during the transplant. And it actually was done through double lumen central line that feeds into her heart, which is totally not what I had pictured whenever you first think of a bone marrow transplant. But it was really neat. It was very humbling and very touching to watch and to experience. She pulled through perfectly fine. Everything went great as expected. And from that point on, we were basically just in the grafting phase of everything. You know, we were just kind of waiting on the new bone marrow to take over. We were hopeful that all the chemo plus all the radiation had zapped anything of hers that could have possibly been left. So we were strictly just waiting on his bone marrow to get in there and do what it's supposed to do. Making sure that we didn't hit any major complications, that her body didn't reject it, that kind of thing. We remained in the hospital for not long at all, maybe 6 more weeks, I guess, after the transplant. And then they, you know, everything was looking perfect. I mean, we did a bone marrow aspiration and we sent that off to Seattle. It came back showing 0% cancer. Which is, you know, a term that they would call MRD negative, which in essence is remission. MRD is just minimal residual disease, which is a fancy word for the cancer. So to be MRD negative, that means that you have no cancer evidence, like no evidence of the cancer in her marrow. So, I mean, we thought we were set, especially with that being the first reading. You know, we were kind of prepared for the first one to possibly still show a little bit of cancer in there, but only because her body had not quite had time to thoroughly flush and adapt by the time we got to that day plus 30 reading. They do want it day plus 30 from the transplant, day plus 60, day plus 90, and so on. So that day plus 30 one, the first one, came back beautiful, perfect, zero cancer. So, you know, 2 weeks past that, we went home, not home, but, you know, they require you to live locally to the hospital just in case of emergency. You know, things can go downhill very, very quickly in our case. So being far away from the hospital is not exactly ideal. So we were in an apartment in the Summit, which is a beautiful mall here in Birmingham. We remained there until just last week, actually. But at the day plus 60 bone marrow, she was, again, 100% clear. Nothing, not even a tenth of a percentage, nothing at all was showing up in the bone marrow. So I had told myself that if we had a second MRD negative bone marrow aspiration, then in my mind, we were in the clear. I mean, that would be consistent. That would be trending. That would be all I needed to really have that hope that things were finally okay again. And so she had since then blossomed again. I mean, you know, chemotherapy, radiation, transplant, all of that can make you feel really crummy. So she hadn't been Maggie, so to say, for quite a while. She certainly was not a typical 3-4-year-old getting to live a typical 3-4-year-old life. It wasn't full of, you know, running around and swimming and playing games and bubbles and all this stuff. It was feeling sick and being in the bed, and you know. So after the MRD negative reading, she began to get that childlike behavior back, and that was the most beautiful thing to see. That is, I can't explain what it did to my heart to see her enjoying life again after what felt like so long of her not. She was awake more during the days. she was so happy, and just everything was going perfectly. I had a meeting with our team at one of our clinic visits. We had to go into the clinic a couple of times a week, just to check labs, make sure things were still looking good. She's still on a feeding tube, so, you know, we would have to go in and make sure that, you know, our weight was at a reasonable place and that we didn't need to make any adjustments with that. So at one of the clinics, you know, Dr. Chewing, which was our main doctor, had said, don't forget, you know, we've got our third and our last bone marrow aspiration coming up, our day plus 90. So, you know, y'all come in this day, we'll have to admit you. Things can, you know, we can kind of get stuff ordered quicker when we're inpatient than trying to schedule it all outpatient. So, and because of the tumors, Simon sedation isn't comfortable sedating her. So we have to go with straight anesthesia anyway. So it only makes sense to be inpatient during the aspiration. So the next week came and we went into the hospital, spent the night, got comfortable, settled in. The next morning, early, they send for transport up there. They take her downstairs. They do an MRI. They did the bone marrow aspiration and a lumbar puncture, which is a pretty typical standard round of testing after, you know, for where we were. And it was to my knowledge that we would go home after, you know, a few hours after she got back from all the procedures, give herself enough time to wake up, make sure she was eating, drinking, urinating, that kind of thing. So I remember we were in our room and I was packing things up, getting ready, and see Dr. Chewing outside our window, and he knocks on the door, walks in, and asks if I could step outside for a second. To be as paranoid as I usually am and fearful as I usually am, him telling me that her cancer was back was nowhere on my mind. I mean, nowhere. I was not the least bit concerned that that's what he needed to talk about. So I walked out with him, and we walked down the hall a little bit, and he just kind of turned and said, her bone marrow showed 9% blast. And I just, like, I don't know, it's hard to explain, but it's almost like I chose not to hear what he said. So I just kind of snickered, and I said, what? No way. And he said, no, I'm serious. And I did not even know what to say, especially knowing that it was coming in at a 9% reading, which was higher, to my knowledge, than it had ever been before. Mm. So that, I think, sent me into a shock of some sort. I mean, everything looking back, just, it's all blurry, it's all fuzzy, it's all confusing, honestly. So I obviously got pretty upset, and so him and I went into a room that was vacant, that no patients were currently in at the time, so that I, you know, wasn't ugly crying in front of everybody. So we just kind of sat down, and neither of us said anything for a few minutes. And so after a little bit of time and of complete silence, I asked him if he was sure and if there was any way that this could be a mistake. And, you know, could it have been a fluke? Could something have gone wrong? Is there any hope here that this is not true? Because it just doesn't add up. She's been so happy, and she's been so playful and joyful, and she's not been in pain for once in her life. And, like, there's just no way. This cannot be. So he kind of assured me that there was honestly no way that it was a mistake. And it just felt like my whole world was torn apart all over again. it felt so much harder than the first relapse. And I don't know why. I think it's because the further down this road we get, obviously, the less options we have. And the more fearful I get of losing her. So we kind of decided that I would still take Maggie home. We were right up on Thanksgiving, and, you know, he and I both agreed that, you know, we wanted her to get to spend it with family and friends and all that. So he let us go home, and we soaked up just about as much as we could at home. And he had us come back often, very often, every day, every other day, to check labs. To kind of track how high the blast count was getting as the cancer kind of worsened. And so basically what it boiled down to was our only option was a trial study that was in Philadelphia. And the more we looked into it, we discovered that it could actually be done here in Children's of Birmingham. And we wouldn't have to travel to Pennsylvania. So we were hopeful for a specific spot, and long story short, we ended up not getting that spot. So it was, you know, our treatment was delayed, a little bit, which worried me terribly because I knew that that blast count was only increasing by the hour. And I was really afraid of, I guess, just getting to the point where there was no option and that nothing could be done at that point. So those last few weeks were absurd. I mean, I hope nobody had to deal with me because I was on edge 24/7, just kind of waiting on something to come up that we could do. Because whenever we decided on the transplant, that was kind of our last resort at that time. There were no new FDA-approved drugs that, you know, that would fix this, and we knew that. So we had put all we had into that transplant working. That was going to be our golden ticket out of here. That was going to be what saved her. So the more days that went by, the more discouraged I got. And finally, a little over a week ago, Dr. Cheening called. Out of nowhere, a spot had opened, and we were able to snag it, which it was another God thing, because at that point, the cancer was at like 53%. And again, that number that is insane. That's a very high number, which we expected. We knew that it could only get worse, but it was still very difficult to deal with as it got worse. So he asked us, you know, to be there first thing the next morning so that we could kind of take care of all the other basically prerequisites to, start the study. The study was an antibody infusion called flotetuzumab. I had never heard of that before. I did my own research, and of course, I found that it was indeed a very new phase one trial that, you know, they're just experimenting with. So I remained hopeful, though, that, you know, maybe this will do it. So we got here first thing that next morning, and they took her down to surgery because we had to have a midline put in. She has a port, which is an access that, again, feeds straight to her heart. A couple of months back, we actually had to have her central line removed from her heart because somehow infection had gotten to that. And we were in Auburn at the time of it really setting in. And by the time I was able to get her to the hospital here in Birmingham, she was already septic at that point. So they went in, had to pull the lines completely, and did not feel as though it was a safe option to try to put in more. So we instead went the route of a port. So we have that port, but during one of the rules and regulations of this study is that we have to get labs at least daily. So you can't draw labs from the same source that you're infusing the drug into. And with it being a 24/7 infusion, never having breaks, never, you know, turning it off, it's all day, every day. We had to have some other way to get labs that was not, like I said, that was not feeding from the exact same place that her port was dropping.
Right.
So they went in her arm and placed a midline. And I think a day after that, we found that it was no longer operating correctly. We could not get blood back from it. They weren't sure if it was just because of the severity of the cancer or what. But so they're currently having to stick her each day, and that is not fun, to say in the least. It's very traumatizing for me and for her, and I'm sure for the nurses. But that is where we are currently. We're on day 4 of the flotetuzumab trial study. On day 2, we had a very bad reaction to it. They had increased our dosage from 30 to 100 units that day, and she was right to the point of anaphylactic shock, high fever, jerking. She had to be put on oxygen, rashes, her eyes were swollen, her face was swollen, her whole body was swollen, projectile vomiting, basically all the stuff, all the symptoms, all the things. We were administering medication after medication, trying to mitigate things. We finally turned to what we refer to as the rescue drug, which is tocilizumab. So it's still in the mAb family, still in the same family as our main flotetuzumab, but the tocilizumab was supposed to kind of offset some of these symptoms that are normal but not good at the same time. But it was ineffective for her. So we ended up having to administer epinephrine, stopping the flotetuzumab at once. You can't get those at the same time. So from epinephrine, we went to dexamethasone, which is just the steroid. And once we completed just one dose of dexamethasone, then we were able to pick back up with the flotetuzumab. We started back at the slow rate to ensure that we weren't, you know, pushing it too quickly and increasing our risk for a reaction again. And she has done wonderfully since then, fingers crossed. It's definitely been a whirlwind of things with this trial, but I remain hopeful and prayerful that work, because this is left, and that's very difficult to accept and to process and to cope with.
Well, Catherine, we know that the medical team has their part. We know that you have your part as a mom. We know that Kyle and Eli have their part as brothers, and you have other supporting family. And then mm-hmm. we have listeners and followers who have seen your posts for support and courage that you've shown through this, the bravery that you've shown, Catherine, and going through what you've had to experience, and her dad as well. What I want to do is take a quick break, And when we come back, I want to share with listeners and followers how they can help right now with your family. I know we mentioned at the very start of the program, Megan Green, who's a friend of ours, and she's had to go through her own cancer journey with her daughter. And we want to show our support for you right now, Catherine, and try to help your family and help Maggie through this process. So if you'll stick with me, we'll come back and then we'll talk about how people can support Maggie's effort, okay?
Absolutely.
All right, folks, we're talking to Catherine Grant right now. Maggie is going through this new treatment for Maggie. When we come back, we're going to talk about how you can support this family, how you can be a supporter of this effort. You are listening to The Mark White Show and the Mary Faye Hedrick Good Deed segment, and I'm your host, Mark White.
Now's a tiny price to pay. Let's all do something good today. A little wink, a pat on the back, a big old hug, a little laugh. We can make a difference. All we have to do is try. Yeah, every day's a chance to change somebody else's life. Let's all do something good today.
Thompson Roofing and Construction is a locally owned family business serving the North Alabama and Southern Tennessee area. They are a Better Business Bureau A-plus member since 2011 and a GAF Master Elite Contractor. Give them a call at 256-952-3309 or check them out on the web at 256roofing.com. They offer free inspections.
Thompson Roofing and Construction.
Located in Tuscumbia, Alabama, the Alabama Music Hall of Fame honors Alabama's music achievers. You can even go into the recording studio and try out your talents as a singer. That's the Alabama Music Hall of Fame, located at 617 Highway 72 West in Tuscumbia, Alabama. Open Tuesday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Give them a call at 256-381-4417. Check them out on the web at alamhof.org.
Are you a first responder? At Husqvarna, we support the uniformed men and women who serve our country and communities. As a way to honor your service, we created the Military and First Responder Appreciation Program. As a first responder, you qualify for a discount on your purchase of Husqvarna powered equipment. Get 10% off select commercial products at participating dealers. Whether you're starting a business or maintaining your property, you can count on Husqvarna. Find out why we're the brand that's trusted by real professionals. Visit Green's Dependable Hardware at 15220 A, Highway 43, Russellville, Alabama. You can also find them on Facebook at Green's Dependable Hardware. Give them a call at 256-331-0123.
Hey, Mom! I want to go to Early Works.
Yeah, Mom. Bring the kids to Early Works Children's Museum. Early Works has reopened with new safety protocols and an exciting new exhibit. Toys, The Inside Story, is a hands-on experience that lets you find out how toys work. You can see the Star Wars collection, try out the giant Etch-A-Sketch, test your skills on an old-fashioned pinball machine, and play at the Lego River Water Table. It is all at the Early Works Museum in downtown Huntsville. Go to earlyworks.com for tickets and more information.
I had a 6 transistor when I was a kid. Under my pillow, I kept it hid.
Hey, this is Lionel Cartwright, and you're listening to The Mark White Show. Mark's making a difference. You go make a difference too, okay? I watched it all on my radio. I watched it all on The Mark White Show.
Second base, wants dad to watch him play. Daddy knows he's waiting, so he hurries. Welcome back to the Mark White Show and the Mary Faye Hedrick Good Deed segment. We have been spending the past few minutes talking about Maggie. She's a three-year-old right now going through a new treatment. Catherine shared about how this process has come to pass where Maggie's now part of this trial, and we're thankful that they found a spot for her, but thankfully it can be done in Birmingham. Now, Maggie's had some challenges with it, but it sounds like right now things have leveled out, that maybe the trial is working for her. It's not as hard on her necessarily as it was just a couple of days ago. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Catherine, when you think about someone like Megan Green or other people who have stepped in to support your family during this time, how does that make you feel?
Humbled. I don't know. I truly don't know of a better word than just complete humility. To know that, you know, she can sympathize with where I am in a way. I mean, we all have like our own journeys. And while they are similar in the fact that it's childhood cancer, you know, each one is different. But to know that she knows where I'm coming from, she knows what this is like. She has stepped in on so many different occasions. I mean, truly so many different times. And basically done what needed to be done for me without me even having to ask. And that alone has been amazing, truly amazing.
Well, and you've begun to know Kinsley as well, and that sweet, precious baby. She has gone through a lot herself with cancer. And through my show, we've tried to support the Green family and help them where we can. And I have seen Megan help other families, and she's reached out to me before to try to help other families. And as I mentioned, not just Megan, but Ben and Lauren Green, who have the Rosie, their own daughter, passed from cancer, and they shared your post. That's what allowed me to know about Maggie and your situation and to reach out to try to get some help for you. And I wanted to mention the fundraiser that's currently going on through a GoFundMe. It's called Team Maggie. Now, the GoFundMe, I'll give the short link, which is gf.me/y89hbs. For those who are listening, just to be clear, it's G as in golf, F foxtrot, dot M as in Mike, E as in Echo, / Y as in Yankee, 89, H as in hotel, B as in Bravo, S as in Sierra. That's the GoFundMe page, and I want people to support this effort financially if they can. I can't imagine the financial struggle that it creates, expenses that go into that with traveling, food, and lodging while you're in Birmingham.
It's been very difficult financially. I had about 3 days before Maggie was originally diagnosed, I had accepted a job at Grandview Medical Center, the beautiful new hospital on 280 here in Birmingham, which obviously I, you know, had to go in and step down from that position. They were very understanding though, and explained, you know, that I would still have my job waiting whenever this journey was finished. So that was definitely a blessing to have a supportive group of people that did not even know me yet. I had not even been to my first day of work. I was supposed to go to orientation, I think, the following day, if I remember correctly. And so I quit because someone has to be here. When it's a baby, someone has to be here 24/7 at their bedside, which, I mean, no, you shouldn't have to tell people that. Like, as a parent, you have no bigger desire than to be at your child's side during something like this. But so it was kind of a no-brainer. I wasn't really thinking about the future whenever I quit. I just knew what I needed to do then, and that's what I did. And God has seen me through. I've had a bunch of hiccups after after Maggie hit remission the first time, I was actually in the process of having to file bankruptcy. I lost my vehicle, all that, just because with no job, there's no income. And with no income, you cannot pay for things.
That's right.
I mean, it's that simple. So it got very difficult very quickly. But I have a family that's very dear to my heart in my hometown. I feel now that I'm just as close with them as my own parents. And I refer to them as my second set of parents. They took us in. They found a great place for me and Maggie and Kyle and Eli to live upon finally getting to leave the hospital after that first remission. And they went above and beyond to make sure that we were very well taken care of in every form and fashion from that point on. In fact, I call her Mama Sue. She was with me in the room the night that we were told that Maggie had indeed 100% relapsed. The meeting with the team and with the doctor. So that was a very, very emotional time, and I was very thankful that she, along my own parents and people close to me, were able to be with me. But if it weren't for them, I'm not really sure where I would be right now. Even here in Birmingham, I don't have any family here, so it's
okay.
Very difficult. It's a lot of weight. It's heavy. And even in Coleman, I don't have family. So that's been difficult in this process, not having them close to me. But my mom has since retired so that she could be up here more to help me. And so that has been a blessing this time around.
Is your background a nurse? Is that what you were going to the hospital to do or something else?
Yes.
So it's completely different when you're dealing with patients versus your own family and your own daughter. Completely different situation for you.
100%.
I know as a police officer, when I worked over the 17 years as a law enforcement officer, I was able to handle other people's situations when it came to personal circumstances with your own family and people you're close to. It is completely different when you're faced with that.
Absolutely. It's definitely a game changer.
Well, I want you to know, Catherine, that we're here for you. I'm glad that Megan organized the fundraiser. I'm thankful that Lauren posted your pleas for prayer. And it's very important that people who are listening right now put Maggie on their prayer list and think about her every single day, just like they do the other people that we've recognized on this show, and add this 3-year-old little girl, and also add Kyle and Eli to their prayers as well, as brothers who love their sister very, very much and want to see her be full of life and happy and running and playing just like a little girl should be doing right now.
Absolutely. And I actually wanted to point out, so Maggie and Rosalyn were just really good friends. Rosalyn loved Maggie. Maggie loved Rosalyn. Super sweet friendship. We were all in the hospital at the same time. And so that enabled Lauren and I to become really close. We would walk to Publix together to get some groceries. And, Rosalyn would stay back with Maggie, and they would play while we went. And it was a very, they say that like some of the hardest times you benefit with the greatest friendships from them. And I can definitely attest to that. It's friendships on such a different level than your average friendship. There's just a matter of vulnerability, I guess, in the friendships that are made here on 8 Quarterback on our floor, within our cancer family. Just because we all know we all know what the others are going through, and it's just a whole different level of closeness. So Maggie and Rosalind were friends, and Maggie talks about her often. And I still speak with Lauren often. Very thankful for her and Ben. Very thankful.
Well, it's been a blessing for me to be able to connect with families that are there and be able to try to help them as much as I can. And I know what you're saying, because I've heard it from families over and over again. It's the place where they don't want to connect with people because of the issue that's happening because of cancer, but the connections that they make are the strongest connections they've ever had in their entire life when it comes to friendships.
Yes. There is just something to be said about a friendship that is as vulnerable as these are. Very hard to explain.
Well, Catherine, again, we're here for you, and I want to make sure that listeners know how to help, and I want to be able to walk with you on this journey, and I will stay in touch with you as well as Megan on how the GoFundMe is doing. I do want people to go and search GoFundMe.com, Team Maggie, M-A-G-G-I-E, Team Maggie, and also the link that I gave, the short link, is gf.me/y89hbs. That is the short link to the GoFundMe, but you can search Team Maggie. And when you get to Team Maggie, the correct one, I don't know if there's another one, but you'll see a shoreline. You'll see the waves rolling in, and you'll see Catherine with her two boys and daughter there in the picture. So look for that picture to make sure it's the right one. But you can certainly help the family that way through the GoFundMe. And, of course, you've got our prayers, Catherine, and we're here to support you however we can.
You have no idea how thankful I am. Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity and for taking the time to listen and hear our story. It truly means a lot.
Well, Catherine, I appreciate your time today, and I look forward to helping your family and hearing great news from Maggie as this trial moves forward, and hearing from the medical team the good news. Folks, we've been talking to Catherine Grant. She is in Birmingham, Alabama, and we are talking about her three-year-old daughter, Maggie, who is currently in a trial. We want to continue to support this family and be there for Catherine. Be there for the boys. Be there for Kyle and Eli, 7 and 8 years old. Eli, 7, and Kyle, 8 years old. What these young men are having to go through, the experience that they are having right now, their special sister is going through this, and I can't imagine these young boys, but the strength that they're going to have when they come out of this is going to be remarkable. These young men can definitely be lights and examples to the world because of what they're going to find within themselves because of this. And Catherine, as a mother, to be strong for her children, find an opportunity to help this family. But I'm going to encourage people to go to Maggie's Battle Against Leukemia and join that page, and then find the fundraiser and also follow Maggie's journey. You've been listening to another edition of The Mark White Show and the Mary Faye Hedrick Good Deed segment. I want you to find a purpose in Maggie. And as always say, this is Mark White encouraging you to find your purpose by making a difference in someone's life today.
And gentle people who shout a friendly hi when they go passing by, who live and love in my hometown. Ah, these are my kind of people.
Hi, everybody, this is DJ Thomas. You know, raindrops may be falling on your head, but on Kyla's corner, she's living life sunny side up. Nothing
seems to fit. You are my sunshine. Oh,
this is Kyla Carter of Kyla's Corner. You can hear my segment every Saturday at 10 a.m. Central Standard Time and 11 a.m. Eastern Time on The Mark White Show. Remember to tune in every Saturday and always live life sunny side up.
Please don't take my sunshine.
sunshine away.
If you like hickory smoked ribs that fall apart at the slightest pull, or barbecue shoulders that are so slow smoked each tender bite melts in your mouth, then you are going to love Baby Jack's Barbecue. Baby Jack's Barbecue in Bartlett and Arlington. Try the barbecue chicken, beef brisket sandwich, barbecue potato, it is huge, or the Baby Jack Trio, pork, turkey, or beef brisket sliders. You like wet ribs? They like dry ribs. Get one slab that has them both. Catering? Baby Jack's can feed a family or an army. Drive in, drive through, order online, or come in and set a minute. Baby Jack's Barbecue in Bartlett at Highway 70 in Appling, or in Arlington at Highway 70, just a block west of 385.
Hello, my name is Christian Martinez. I'm a rising senior at Athens Bible School. My school is great because of the wonderful environment in which students can grow and flourish. We have great academics that include the university preparatory diploma and dual enrollment courses that lead to an associate's degree before high school graduation. All my teachers and the school's employees are Christians who are devoted to the welfare of students. We have an excellent student body, competitive sports program, and study the Bible first thing every day. It's a great place. Give that special child in your life the great opportunity I have.
Are you in Alabama and need questions answered by a medical professional? If so, my friends at Trinity Medical Care are proud to announce that they are offering telemedicine. With telemedicine, you can stay at home and still have your visit with the doctor. Telemedicine from Trinity Medical Care is now available Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. Make your telemedicine appointment today by calling 256-489-3192. That number again, 256-489-3192. You can also follow Trinity Medical Care on Facebook.
No representation is made that the quality of legal services to be performed is greater than the legal services performed by other lawyers.
Losing a loved one is hard, but losing a loved one and not having an estate plan is even harder. Attorney Harlan Mitchell witnessed what not having an estate plan can do to families and decided to use his experience to do something about it. I encourage you to go to BamaEstatePlanning.com or give Harlan Mitchell a call at 256-216-9884. Again, that website is BamaEstatePlanning.com. Let Harlan Mitchell help you with estate planning. Do it for those you love and do it today.
Discover fascinating animals from the islands of the world when you visit the Island Life Exhibit at Tennessee Aquarium. You'll be amazed at what you find.
We may never see tomorrow anyway. Let's all do something good today. Oh, won't you hear me, people, when I say, let's all do something good today.